Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good afternoon, Sherry.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Howdy, howdy.
How you doing?
I'm doing quite well, actually. I was just thinking, it's really marvelous to be able to be, here it is springtime, and the days are longer, just to be outside at 8:30 at night and have it still be light, and kind of that quality
isn't
of light.
Isn't it just the absolute best?
It really is, And the cold weather has kind of cleared, so each evening has that opportunity in it, so it's quite grand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love it. You know, that's I actually go out of dormancy at when the daylight saving time. The days get long, and I go, okay, yes, time to be alive again. I guess hibernation is what it is, right? Hibernate and wait for this time of year. Yeah, good. Yeah.
That's what's so great timing about the best shape possible.
Isn't
like
it?
Coming out of dormancy, and here we are. So that
That's
energy,
right.
Where to go with it.
Yeah, because those bikinis are waiting.
Of course they are.
In my case, they're going to wait a really long time. But, you know, there are people who still have those aspirations. So we,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I have an announcement this evening.
All right.
If you enjoyed at-home working meditation retreats, we think you'll love our new offering, a series of workshops on the art of vegetarian cooking. The first workshop is Sunday, May 24th, and will support participants through step-by-step preparation of a simple meal. The workshop is by donation. For this and other practice opportunities, visit livingcompassion.org.
Mm-hmm. And we already talked about the other one that's coming up tomorrow in the morning for me. 10 a.m., I guess, 1 o'clock for you, huh?
Exactly.
Yeah, our best shape. So I hope people will be there. And it's not too late. I know we have a good number of the, you know, where people have written in their aspirations and that sort of thing, but not everybody. And so we really encourage everybody to just take that opportunity to really focus and then send it in, because it's up on the website and people, everybody can read it and, you know, just take inspiration from one another and be hopeful from one another and lend strength and support and all that sort of thing. So,
yeah. And so, Sherry, even though that first call is tomorrow, if one were to do that this evening, then that would make it to their website.
Yeah. And going forward, you know, I don't think that has a cutoff. So, I mean, I hope people won't do it 3 or 4 weeks in, but, you know, if it's a couple of days, then go ahead.
It'll get there. Yeah, great.
It'll get there, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
All right, and then a couple of reminders before we restart. If you would like to get in the queue and talk with Sherry, please press *6 and then 1 to make a show. And a conversation on one topic in 5 minutes, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and we are ready to get started, Sherry.
All right, I'm ready too.
First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself? First caller.
Oh, hi, this is Ren. There was a little delay.
Hi there.
I am going to be a long time from bikini season as well, but I wish those people well that are trying it.
Mm-hmm. They're very, very courageous. Hey, before I ask you to go on, I just got a text message saying, oops, no, Huber. The form was closed when we closed registration for that event tomorrow. So never mind about that.
Oops.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, tell me everything.
A little practice success. There's so many things I could go into, but I'm going to focus on this one that happened today.
Okay.
It's a lot of back and forth at work, whether I'm going to continue in my current position as a preschool teacher or move up to the kindergarten. And there was no funding, and then there was funding, and the whole time I was trying not to get into conditioning, but conditioning was
trying to get into you.
So strong.
Yeah.
So strong. And then once it really doesn't matter which, you know, of the dualities that I picked, but let's just call it A and B. I was certain on A, then I was certain on B, and then when I was given a choice, I did the interview, and I realized that she was trying so hard to please everybody else that she had listened to voices that said, she's too old, she did this so long ago, everything's different now. And then when the interviewer said, like, tell me more about that, there was so much more.
Mm-hmm.
And it, like, just came in like, oh, it's clearly A, because it just is. Like, it's not even a... I feel like it was a calling. I can't... There's really no words, but it was really the interview process that saved her, me, from making, you know, just a whole lot of suffering over, you know, not that much of a situation that I had any control over, and less of like situations. But in the end, when I was given the choice, which was interesting that I was given the choice in the end, I chose the one I didn't think I was going to choose because I was listening to my heart and not my head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, yes, a practice success. a strong vote for, yes, use the practice tools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because otherwise, I mean, what you're describing is true for all of us. We're just alone with conditioned mind as it ping-pongs us back and forth. And because we're so convinced that what we're hearing in our head is us, right? It's me. That's what I'm thinking, so it must be true for me. Until we start doing processes like looking at dualities, where it begins, you know, you're watching that and you realize it's going A, B, A, B, and you're watching it go through that process that is meant to drag you into it, right? When you begin to use the tools, then you have that distance where you can watch the whole thing. And I think what you're indicating is it can still be surprising. Right? Because in the end, you went with something that those voices were never going to allow you to do. You were going to just go with your heart.
And I, you know, if you ask me to rate myself on interviewing, I'm not sure if I'm doing it right, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But I said, well, you know what? I'm just going to do it. And I'm going to learn as I do it. And it was so powerful for being able to take that little step back.
Mm-hmm.
So it was reminding me of, you know, like if you're someone else is on the cushion, or you are putting a doll on the cushion or whatever, a picture of yourself, and then you're, you know, asking the questions, like you can just get enough of a distance to say, well, why do you, you know, is that so? And so it was just so beautiful because I was really in a very tortured place and I didn't need to be because the truth of the matter was A is fine and B was fine. I just lost all my confidence. But now I feel really happy that, you know, I came to practice to not figure it out, but let it unfold the way. And now I'm sure in my heart. And it's such a nice feeling. So I thank you so
and
much.
And I'll tell you what makes you unstoppable. And it's what you just said about you hear a voice that says, well, you don't know how to do that. And your response isn't, yeah, that's true, I won't. Your response is, well, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to learn as I go.
And that's exactly what I'm going to do on this job.
Yes, exactly.
I'm gonna learn as I
go. You're going to learn as you go, and you're going to be with that human being. You're going to be with her every step of the way so that she is not left alone with those torturing voices. It makes all the difference in life. It's the difference between a life of suffering and a life of happiness.
It really is. And the voices would, I don't know where I was going with this, but they, you know.
They would try to take that away from you. They would try to convince you that you don't know that. That would be their next move.
Like, just give up because, like, now you're not good at anything. And, like, what? Like, wait.
That's right. You know, you don't have to listen to that. Yeah. Well, good job. Good job, you. That's what we like to say. Good job, you.
And I appreciate Sangha so much, hearing everything. I love it. Okay, I'm going to pass the baton now, Kesho.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that. And a very deep and heartfelt gusho to you as well.
Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Go happy.
Thank you, Ren. And I cannot unmute you or mute you, Ren, so if you would call back in or mute yourself, that would be great. And Sherry, what was dropping in for me in that conversation was with the interview process, it's almost like these, whoever I am facilitating, it's almost like they're spring-loaded in some way. As soon as a facilitation begins, there's surprises. There's information that comes out that is unexpected, right? And it's like it's always been there, and we're just waiting for that invitation to kind of have a few things to say.
Yeah, and we can sense that they're being held behind those voices.
Exactly.
Right? Yep. Yeah, that's the barrier. And as soon as we take that step that Ren was describing, and we invite somebody to speak, as you say, they're just blah, 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 blah. They've got all kinds of things. Yeah. And it's who we want to go through life with.
Yeah.
That enthusiasm and openness and, that's who we are, and that's who we want to be. Not that, you can't, it won't be. Yeah.
Yeah. And that additional information really aids the disidentification, right? Recognizing the pattern and this person who's in front of me.
And what the feeling I have from what you're saying, Chris, is the surprise in it. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're so, there's so much more to us than we've been allowed to know. And there's just the thrill with that. There's such excitement. What else? Well, what more?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right. Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, it's Jodine in California.
Hey, Jodine.
Hey. I had to call in about a recent conversation about facing our issues versus kicking them down the street, kind of. And it was like, oh, the light went on. So these days, I've been looking at an old issue for me, which is depression, and not from experiencing it, but just on the outside, you know, looking at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the there are suggestions to this effect in the depression book, and also in another type of depression therapy I encountered lately, about if you're depressed, you're doing something that's making you depressed, most likely.
Mm-hmm. You're depressing.
You are. It's something you're doing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Jodine, right there, I would argue, because I think that the significant piece of this practice says, actually, it's not you.
Mm.
Right? You are falling for something. You're believing something. You're going along with something. Right? A voice in your head is telling you something, and you're going along with it. Yeah, it's, you know, yeah, I think that that's just the most essential distinction, because otherwise it's hard not to feel accused by something like that. Well,
totally. And I think that's what's missing in the other therapy, which was stated very succinctly by the founder of it. But they totally don't have that perspective of the aspects of the personality.
Yeah.
Egocentric karmic conditioning, self-hate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
and it's so important, especially if you're, well, whatever you've got going on. If somebody says, well, it's something that you're doing, I mean, we can both agree, yeah, I'm certain of it, but it's not me. I'm not doing it.
Right. I'm not the author of this play.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So I, as this has kind of like percolated down, and I'm seeing that depression, I get to a place with it where I'm not taking care of myself, mm-hmm. and an aspect of the personality just becomes terrified that nobody's at the helm. You know, nobody's mm-hmm. taking care of her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, so there's that side of it. But when the light went on during that conversation, I think that I am basically dealing with the issue of adequacy, and that the depression like dramatizes a situation where I become inadequate, or someone who's inadequate to the situation is left trying to deal with it. And mm-hmm. And that's the underlying thing, is that am I adequate or am I not to live my life?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the fear aspect of it, I'm projecting, it turns into almost a paralysis. Don't know where to turn. Don't know how to do this. Right? Which would feed that identification with inadequacy. I can't.
Right. That's the feeling of it all, is I can't do this.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, that's what makes aspects of the personality so important, right? Because one of the things when we talk about aspects of the personality that we attempt to encourage people to see is the system is set up. Karma, or egocentric karmic conditioning, so however you want to look at it, is set up for the wrong person always to be sent to the job.
Right.
Right? So there you are, probably, you know, in that situation, if you're like most of us, there's maybe a 4-year-old, maybe a 3-year-old who is left emotionally, you know, who is left with trying to make choices and decisions for life. And they can't.
Mm-hmm.
They can't. It's true. It's true. they can't, which is why disidentification is so important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the only way, once we see that, that's the only way we can start bringing in the right person for the job.
Yep, the right person for the job.
Mm-hmm.
And I have struggled for such a long time with getting out of bed in the morning. And and that thing, you know, that was, you know, roped into this recent examination too. And I realized, what if I just put my alarm clock in another room?
That's brilliant.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, it's like, they call it behavioral activation in that other therapy. But I have to get up. I have to either lay in bed and listen to the alarm going or get up and do something. And what I almost always end up doing is meditating, because that's the first thing on my agenda. And so it was just like, yes.
Yeah.
But sometimes I'm laying in bed and I'm like, whose idea was it to put that alarm clock in the other room?
Mm-hmm. Which is where, for me, it gets to a sense of humor, right?
Yeah.
That you have to be with that person in a, you know, you kind of become a teenager or something, you know. I don't want to, I hate this. You know, try to put the pillow over your head and just make a joke of the whole thing, because, you know, otherwise it could be a source of great unhappiness for that person. Again, if you leave that person in charge, the person who doesn't want to get out of bed in the morning, is it, where is that coming from, right?
Mm-hmm.
We want to interview that person and find out what they have going on, right? And so if that's, you know, if that's basically an ego identification and it's there to contribute to your unhappiness, then we want to bring a lightness and a, you know, be the person you want to be, right, in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Let that person hop out of bed and go deal with that alarm clock.
Yep, and I think that, I don't know how this kind of happens, but the once I have enough practice kind of under my belt to, you know, when somebody asks me, you know, can you do this, or can you do this something, whatever, and I say, of course I can do it. Like, I've had enough practice to get to that place, and then, mm-hmm. you know, and then this whole thing arose. I think it was like Monday. Was it yesterday? Yes. in the conversation, I'm like, I can do this. Yes, yeah. I can do this.
Yes. And you know, Joanie, the other piece of it is, and I want to.
Right.
I want to. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can, and I want to. I choose to.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because that's such an ego orientation. I don't want to. I don't feel like it. You can't make me. Yeah. And when mm-hmm. we start looking at our lives and realizing, I got a human to take care of here. I got to take care of this person. I can. I can do that, and I want to. Whatever it takes, I want to.
Yes.
This is the only human I've got. You know? Without this human, And so we want to learn to cherish and really care for this incarnation that offers us everything. Everything. Once we can get back, I think we mentioned it. I mentioned on the morning show that Ashwini and I started playing with this thing about what is happiness. It's the absence of unhappiness, right?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, and it can sound silly until you really look at it and go, well, that's true. If I stop all this unhappy conversation in my head, I think what's going to be there is I'm actually going to be happy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote on a post-it for my refrigerator, just face it.
Yeah.
Like just do
face it.
But just face it. Just face it.
Yeah. Yeah, face it, choose
it.
Can. Make it yours, because you can and you want to.
Yeah.
It's there for me. And you know, Joni, that's such an important piece of it. It's not there for me as a lesson in anything. It's there for me to realize that I choose this, and I want to choose it because that's what shows me who I am.
Mm.
Trying to avoid it, trying to get out of it, trying to, you know, put it off for another day, kick it down the road. You know, all that does is put me in a position of being victimized by a nasty ego conversation in my head. As soon as I face it, I'm on the other side of it. I'm free of it. I've transcended it. If I try to kick it down the road, it's going to torture me every day of my life, probably multiple
yes.
times a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank okay. you so much for this. What a joy.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, practice.
Yeah, thank you, practice.
Thank you, Jodine. And Sherry, I have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, Sherry and Chris. This is Jeff in Washington.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey. Well, I am, I've really been enjoying life. Enjoying life, yeah.
Wow,
I know, and enjoying the current assignment in the year-long retreat. And I really think, I think that's been a big part of it. And there's another thing I think is a big part of it. But I I'm going to tear up about it. This week's practice looking at, is my experience of the now perfect? And if not, what am I carrying? And, you know, thoughts, tensions, pressures, desires, et cetera. And so I've got my alarm. This is when I'm at home. I don't have it at school set every half hour, when I'm at home, I have it set, and I do three things. And the first of them is that assignment. And I, for some reason, it just really brings me here.
Mm-hmm.
I think somehow it brings me to an experience of process. So whatever the content is, it doesn't matter because it's bringing me to seeing it as thoughts, tensions, pressures, desires, and the rest of it. And so whatever it is, I'm not seeing it through the content anymore. When I start to look, I'm seeing it through. Oh, okay, is my experience of the now perfect? Well, if I'm present. Yes, and if there's anything going on, well, I have the opportunity to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
It's like a miracle, isn't it? It's like the secret sauce or something, right? Yeah, because because what it's letting you do is disidentify and mm-hmm. step back, right? Such that you're seeing, you know, that when we talk about you're either seeing through conditioned mind or you're looking at conditioned mind. And that's what you're describing, right? You can see, oh, well, that's conditioned mind, basically. That's, excuse me, that's tensions, pressures, and desires, and all of the other things that we get pulled into. Oh, well, that's what that is. I see that. Yeah, I can drop that. Yeah. But when we're caught in it, of course, we can't, which is why what you're describing is such a miracle. The alarm goes off. I disidentify. I'm where I want to be. I see what's going on. I don't have to stay engaged with it.
Yeah. Yes. And it's just so amazing. And I think another part of it for me is that recently, I think there's been a catching on to that, you know, that nothing knows better than life. And there's been a lot of times where I stay, you know, an alarm goes off and I do a practice and still there's the, you know, basically, but I know best, you know, that quickly I get back into just being identified again.
But what should I be doing and what's really important now? And shouldn't I this? And you're right back in the conversation in the head, basically, right?
Because there's been this, even though there's a you know, growing trust in life all the time, there's still been these holdout areas. I'm not saying there aren't any at all anymore, but there's been, there's recent, just very recently, I don't even really can't tell you how it happened. I can tell you, Jeff.
Okay, that's right. You've been practicing. That's how it happened. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Yes, well, definitely, through practice, for sure, just continuing to show up, as we talk about, the more you show up, the more you transform, just showing up, practicing, and seeing that, well, I know conditioned mind is not going to give me something better than life, and the great thing about that is, like I have it here on my little whatever piece of furniture, doesn't matter, but this quote from you, life is always doing everything, which is so relaxing to consider. You know, I don't have to do anything, you know, that assignment and the faith in life is what it allows me to do is just whenever that reminder comes, okay, I get to be here now and I don't have to worry about anything because it will do no good to worry about anything.
Or think about anything. Right?
Right.
That's the extraordinary thing to consider. So say you're fixing dinner, you don't have to think about anything other than fixing dinner. And you don't have to think about that. Because you're there. You know, you chop the vegetables, you put the whatever it is that you're doing. And if you're really there doing that, you're in bliss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And all that other stuff that we waste our time, we waste our life on. Well, what about this? And what about that? And I wonder if that's going to happen. And, boy, I better be careful about that because I have to. All that stuff that is simply robbing us of the only life that is possible for us, which is what is happening right now, which also happens to be really happy.
Exactly. Yeah. Just like you were just saying about, happiness is lack of unhappiness or not doing, you know, not
yes.
whatever, not
yes.
creating happiness, not creating
yeah.
unhappiness. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, that's what you just said about wasting time and robbing us of our lives. Those aren't new ideas to me intellectually, but I'm getting that. I mean, I see it so much more now.
You know, here's the deal, Jeff. Here's the deal. You experience it. And that makes all the difference, right? When you feel the difference in being present in the moment that you're in, letting everything go and just being in the moment that you're in, when you feel what that feels like, and then you have the opportunity to feel what it feels like when you're identified with conditioned mind and it's running through all the pressures, stresses, desires, unhappiness, miseries, fears, projections of whatever, right? The difference between those two experiences is so compelling, shocking, whatever it is, right? You get it immediately. I want to live here. I don't want to live in that. And as soon as we have that experience, consciously, we're hooked. We know the difference. Now it's just a matter of practicing that.
The last thing I'll say, because I want to give allow plenty of time for lots of other people, but I was aware that the whole time you were just talking, my head was nodding the whole time. You know, it's just nodding with everything you were saying.
Yes, yes.
It's just
yes,
nodding, yes. Nodding, nodding, nodding.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you.
You are so welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Go happy.
Go happy.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Jeff. And Sherry, my head was nodding as well. So
me too.
Oh, golly. Let's take a break for a good news update.
Oh, well, that sounds good. Well, thank you. Let's do that.
Certainly. All right. My cue will settle down here.
There we go.
All right, Jen, your guest is now live. I'll turn it over to you.
Wonderful. Thanks, Chris. And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Todd, who is here to speak with us about his experience of the privileged environment. Welcome, Todd.
Thanks, Jen. Happy to be here.
Yeah, fabulous topic.
Well, when life dropped it in and I offered it to the Good News Update steward and it came back, great, yeah, talk about it. I realized really how huge it is and then how really amazingly extraordinary and simple it is all at once.
Amen. Absolutely.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Amen.
Say more.
Okay. Well, the guide keeps coming in as I think, you know, where do you start with this? And I guess you start at the beginning. 20-odd years ago, I went to my first retreat at Murphy's, a Zen Monastery Peace Center. And I'd only known practice for a couple of months. I'd read There's Nothing Wrong With You. And this is before the web page and everything sign up. You actually got a number at the back of the book, and you phoned the monastery, and they signed you up for retreats, and they did a little...
Like a telethon, like that, the kind of thing you picked up from a cradle, right? And picked up...
Yeah.
And you talked to a person, and yeah, I
talked to a person, yeah. And they did a little pre-interview, and they asked me, you know, what I knew about practice. And I said, well, I read There's Nothing Wrong With You. I don't know anything about Buddhism. I don't know anything about a monastery. And they said, well, you're welcome to join us. But then they just gently... kindly, compassionately, sort of laid out some of the tenets of the privileged environment so it wouldn't be an entire shock. Mm-hmm. And the ones that initially, of course, I'm so new to practice, and I'm looking to condition mind for everything, even at the monastery. And,
not having an idea that's what's going on, yeah.
Right. And I just loved it. It was 8 days. It was a silent retreat. It was, the only way I could kind of see it is you the encouragement was just we're going to give you guidelines, and you're going to do your very best to follow them. But what happened, what I found is in person, and then it's translated down the line to our virtual stuff, is everyone else was following it. And I was so inspired of how to embrace the unconditional when the majority of my life is conditional.
Mm.
And everybody was leading by example.
Mm.
And I was just so overwhelmed. That was 8 days. I was... totally transformed. For starters, the vegetarian, you know, vegetarian meals. I became a vegetarian right after that retreat, after 45 years of not being a vegetarian. And
there's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other topic. Yeah. And I don't know how you even can weave that into the privileged environment. But, silence and just the respect of you don't, you keep custody of the eyes. I loved that. You could shed your personality. You didn't have to be someone. Go ahead.
I love the piece of the privileged environment is something that we create together, truly. Because, it would be one practice for if an individual decided to keep the privileged environment and no one else around them was, that would be one experience, you know. Certainly, there would be a lot to see in that workshop.
Yeah. Sure.
But absolutely, that in order to truly have the privileged environment that we have in practice, it does take all of us. And I think what you're saying is so beautiful, that that's actually a piece of what makes it so extraordinary is that it does take everyone, and everyone does do it. Which is not to say, especially as someone new to practice, that there aren't, we don't step over those lines, or we don't, inadvertently or just Because we don't know. Because it's new to us. Because we're not trained that way in most cultures. We don't have those tenets that are are underpinning that privileged environment, that are allowing us, as you say, to show up and not need to be a personality, to be all the things I was told I need to be, to, you know, whatever it is, to be friendly, to be accommodating, to be,
but to be social.
We get to be social, right?
Right.
We get this literal and metaphorical blank white wall where people are not interacting with us, they're not looking at us, they're not watching us, they're not. And then we get to see all that's happening internally.
Right.
That backdrop.
I think the guide coined it once. We were looking at, it was in group at the monastery, and the guide was facilitating, and we were looking at, I think I was there for the bridge walk weekend, and somebody had asked the guide, here at the monastery, it's kind of a contained environment. I can follow the guidelines mostly, but how do I go to San Francisco and to the San Francisco Bridge Park amongst hundreds of sangha, and how do I keep the prison environment? She just basically said, well, here's my best encouragement: you're going to do your best, because if you could do better, you would do better. So you can just drop all expectations.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Yeah.
Yeah, and
well,
secondly,
and then you're
Go ahead.
Oh, please. No, you go. And secondly,
what did you see? Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just going to underscore that you were, and maybe this is where you're headed, that that's a whole other piece of the privileged environment, that it's not a rule, right? Because at the bridge walk, you are interacting with people. You are talking to people.
100%. Yeah. 100%, yeah. And then the second component, which just I've taken, and this was a long time ago, this is in one of the early bridge walks, she said, what you'll maybe look for or notice is how your interactions are heart-to-heart rather than ego-to-ego.
Wow.
And just see if you can sense a difference. And 100%, I could see where I was went into my head, and then I got into the conditional, and then I was talking with somebody ego to ego, or I was prompting an ego, crossing that purpose environment line. And then other interactions were heart to heart, and it was kind of clean, and there's no residue.
Yes. Yes. And it really reminds me of the conversation that was just had on Open Air tonight.
Yeah.
Where you start to sense that difference, and there's so much information in sensing that difference.
Yes.
And that piece you just brought in reminds us that the privileged environment is not something that it's like, oh, okay, I do that when I'm around Sangha, and that's just where that is. And then in the rest of my life, I walk around unconscious because I can't have the privileged environment. To realize that the privileged environment, I mean, we need like three more shows to cover all the bases.
We do, don't we, Jen?
For bringing it up, Todd. But what you started with is absolutely true. The layers of it, the richness of it, but just that piece of it's a way of being. It's an attitude of mind.
Yes.
And I think the way you just described it is perfect, right? It's a it's a heart-to-heart connection.
Yeah.
It's a way of living that allows life to live. So instead of really what the privileged environment is this is not a place that where ego is welcome. And it's not that ego won't come into it at all.
Yeah.
In fact, it absolutely does come into it. But because the way the environment is created, we see it. When ego enters that environment, it's much more obvious. It pops it into relief, and then it's helpful because we can see it and practice with it.
Exactly. And quite a ways into practice, some of my favorite moments in practice was when I was at the monastery doing some in-depth training as a visiting monk, and I would get notes of course corrections. and the initial response is, oh my God, ego, self-hate, just sensations, just brutal. But then, get back to, presence in the heart and just be so thankful that someone would take the time to see that I maybe had not been skillful and I had broken the prison environment. And they gave me a note informing me places to look and how I could be more in alignment with life and not ego. And I just loved those moments, and I continued to. And even in the virtual interaction, sometimes I'll hear the guide course correct a caller because they've strayed a little bit from the frozen environment, and it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And done so compassionately.
Exactly. There's so much compassion in it.
Yes.
I cannot
yes.
believe it, Todd, but we are going to have to hand the show back over to Chris and
Sherry.
But
I
feel like
4 hours.
I feel like we didn't even get to the tip of the iceberg. I think it needs to be a series, yeah. a privileged environment series. There's just
yeah.
so much in it.
It's yeah.
Just, and I love, thank you for bringing it as a topic and reminding us
oh,
of what a
thank you.
It is of this particular practice.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe we can have a Sunday workshop on the privileged environment. That'd be fun.
Yeah, something. Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk about one of my favorite aspects of practice.
Thank you, Todd. Go happy.
Thank you, Jen. Go happy.
And Chris, I'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
All right. Thank you, Jen. And thank you, Todd. And Sherry, that was a fun conversation.
That was. And that's a really good idea to do a workshop on it. You know, I think about the inner peace, world peace notion that, you know, at some point Ashwini and I are going to produce a book on. And just considering how much the privileged environment would facilitate that movement mm-hmm. from to inner peace and the inner peace to world peace, because it's, you know, what Todd was reflecting with the heart-to-heart rather than ego-to-ego. You know, so many of our conversations are just ego-to-ego, and to have an awareness just of that. And as the previous caller was talking about, you know, having an experience of what it's like to be with people from someplace other than ego. It's quite compelling to have that experience is transformative.
Yeah. Yeah. And too, you know, we really haven't been on retreat all that much, you know, so not really immersed
yeah.
in the privileged environment in the way that we used to be. And
yeah.
I do know for me that after being in that environment on a retreat and really learning the benefit of that, then
mm-hmm.
how it became possible, once I could see how it worked on retreat, or in any practice environment,
mm-hmm.
I could see how it works and then begin to set it up for myself, you know, in daily life, right? So
mm-hmm.
Walking
yeah.
meditation in the grocery store aisle or keeping custody of the eyes out in public, checking in with a mentor on a schedule, just all those kinds of things so that
yeah.
that inward, like you say, that inward focus I'm aiding and abetting that inward focus as much as possible.
Yeah. You know, what you just said that, Chris, about custody of the eyes in the grocery store. Wow. I just never thought about that as a thing until you said it. And I just love it. I can't wait to go to the grocery store because what a perfect place to completely lose interest in whatever anybody else is doing and just take that element out of it. It's such an easy place to do it, to
yeah,
practice
there's
it.
Patient about
yeah.
being social or making
yeah.
eye contact at
yeah.
all person. Yeah.
yeah.
Exactly. yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very fun. And they're right. You know, it could be a series. Because there is so much in the privileged environment.
Yeah. All right,
mm-hmm.
we have another caller. Next
okay.
caller, now live on the air, would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry, it's Renee.
Hey, Renee.
Hi. I was calling in to talk about what was talked about on the morning show about facing it.
Uh-huh.
And since then, I've just been looking at it a bit, and I know it is related to, I mean, based on what Ashwini said, looking at getting curious about our processes, kind of like process mapping and recording and listening and interviewing and all of those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it was just the way it was framed was kind of new, maybe,
mm-hmm.
I don't,
mm-hmm.
to me
yeah.
anyway. Yeah.
yeah.
And
yeah.
I just wanted to get more guidance on it.
Well, you know, after that conversation, I thought, you know, I should read I Don't Want to, I Don't Feel Like It Again, because it must be in there somewhere. But that's the, again, just watching it over the years, that's what people are just up against. That's what conditioned human beings are up against. It's like, whatever it is, just get through this moment, okay? This is difficult. This is unpleasant. This is really hard. And so just, okay, avoid it if I can. Don't do it. So let's take meditation. Okay, it's such a perfect one. I know I should meditate, but I don't like it. I don't want to. I don't have time. And so I don't do it. And I feel bad that I don't do it, which is a huge component of that, right? And so if we can get a sense of how that one little vignette plays out in the rest of our lives, we will want to face it somewhere.
Right.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, I can vaguely see it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I don't want to meditate. Okay. I don't like it. I know I should. I'm a Buddhist. I'm a Zen Buddhist. That's what they do. I don't want to. I don't want to go to bed at a regular time. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get up. I don't want to get up early. I don't want to eat healthy foods. I don't want to eat that stuff. I want to, and I don't want to exercise. Right. I don't want to. I'm tired. I have too much to do. And there, we can notice that where that shows up in our lives is all of the things that are good for us. That's what they have in common.
Oh, yeah.
And And so I'm never going to actually be able to take care of myself until I face down the system that is operating that. And once I do, you you immediately have a sense that, well, that's going to take care of it everywhere. Because what we were talking about earlier. Actually, I do want to, and I choose to, and I can.
So it's in that example of when you didn't want to go do workshops. So, like, I can, eating healthy, exercising, I know all that's good for me. But if it's something that's kind of like, I'm not sure if it's good for me, like you maybe didn't know that was good for you. You just didn't want to do it and you didn't think you were good at it at the time. But those are the ones that maybe are more subtle. But what you're saying is if I look at the one that for the things I know are good for me, then it will take care of all the others.
That's exactly right. Because you'll recognize it as a process. And the blessing is that it's a playbook. It's going to run the same play with all this different content, right?
Right.
And
right.
So when you see that, you'll begin to see that, oh, yeah, that's how I get talked out of practicing the violin, and that's how I get talked out of, or that's how I get talked into scrolling on my phone, or that's how I get talked into, because it's dualistic, right? It's the one side, I get talked out of it. The other side, I get talked into it. And they usually go together, right? So if it's food, I get talked out of eating what's healthy and I get talked into eating what's unhealthy.
Right, right. And it seems like there's something to do with enjoyment with it. So, like, I really don't like to exercise. It's not my favorite thing to do unless I'm playing a game or, doing something kind of sports related. So I'd prefer not to exercise, which is more comfortable, more enjoyable to me. Is that part
of
it?
Well, here's the thing. Yes, that is the belief. Okay. That's how it does it to us, right? So I don't like to exercise, and so I don't. And so, of course, I'm not fit, and I'm not healthy, and I'm not, right? And that's the part, I think, that brought this up, because, of course, we work with so many, I mean, we work with people of all ages, but as people get older, then that decision of, I don't like to do this, I don't want to, and so I'm not going to, really begins to take a toll.
Right.
So, yeah. So that's the thing. But one of the aspects of that is, first of all, it's what we were talking about earlier, the wrong person for the right job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so if we bring somebody who doesn't like to exercise to exercise, that's not going to go well.
Right.
Because we're going to be identified with that person, and we agree. Yeah, I don't like to. So that's not
grind.
The person.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not the person to take to exercise. You want to take somebody who wants to exercise, somebody who's physical and likes to be physical, right? And then you want to have that person tell you what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Not let somebody who doesn't like to exercise come up with a program for somebody and then try to either make them do it or go along with, I don't want to. I don't feel like it, so I'm not going to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a whole exploration, right? It's a whole getting to know who all the players are, and increasingly to line the right people up for the right job.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
There's one other thing about it. I don't know where we are with time, but there's one other thing. Oh, we don't have enough time anyway, so good.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
No.
I just wanted to make sure there was enough time for
someone else,
but okay, we're good.
Yeah, I don't think so. So,
okay.
So the main point of this, if there's, the kind of bottom line point of this, is that we have to get to a place where we are making conscious choices from center.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we have to do. Because if we really get it, that system that is making those choices for us, those dualistic, bad choice, worst choice places for us, if we realize that system really doesn't like us. So when we were talking earlier and I kept saying, but that's not me. That's not me. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to get in touch with who the authentic me is, or the authentic I. Who is that? And it is not what is saying, go ahead and eat that thing that you know is bad for you, or don't get up and do the whatever it is, because that's going to be hard and that's going to be unpleasant, just don't do it.
Mm-hmm.
We have to realize that is not us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Until we do, we're kind of doomed.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do believe that it speaks for me, and it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah,
That's why facing it is so powerful and so important, because that is what creates the disidentification that helps us see what it is and what we are.
Right. And, I do exercise, and I do eat healthy. Most of the time.
Yeah.
It's like I only get to do it. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Oh. It's like I get to, I don't get to go all the way. I don't know how
That's
to say
it.
I only get to be like kind of
That's right.
halfway there or something.
That's
yeah.
exactly right. And that's a critical distinction, because once we realize that the greatest pleasure and happiness is taking good care of myself, then I'm no longer going to see eating something that's bad for me as pleasurable or a treat.
Mm-hmm.
I will actually see it as poison, because it's going to poison the person that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no temptation. There is absolutely no temptation there.
Right.
But until we see that, there is, because I believe that I want that and that it'll be pleasant. It'll be pleasant.
And it's caring for me. It's like something
that
about
it's taking
it.
Care of me. That's right. I'm not being
pleasure.
Deprived of.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So when we realize, that what we're doing is pleasuring, such a important way to use the word, pleasuring screw tape.
Mm-hmm.
Then we
not ourselves.
Kind of want, yeah, yeah, we want to examine that.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna take that one for sure. That it's
good,
not me,
good.
And also get curious about, you know, when it won't let me do what I want to do. Yeah,
that's right. Won't yep. It won't let you prioritize Renee.
Right.
Yeah, and especially Renee's heart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right. Very good.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you so much. Good show.
Good show. And thank you, Chris.
Well, of course, Jerry. Thank you, too.
What a pleasure.
It's been an absolute pleasure. And we have hit the
Let's
topic.
Let's do this again.
Let's do it again, as always. So, yeah, once is never enough. Yeah.
No, it never, never. It needs to be a series.
I think so.
All right. Go happy, eh?
Go happy.
All right.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.